Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family. Finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. Now, here's the host of the top-rated show for moms, Maria Bailey, on Mom Talk Radio.
It is June, and we have already had our first name storm. If you are like me, you're still repairing from last year's hurricanes. It's so discouraging, but yet we all know that we're better off than our neighbors to the south in Puerto Rico, and we really can't complain about it. But it would be nice if Mother Nature would give us a break this year and at least wait until August when my roof is repaired so that the water stays out of the house rather than inside of it. But oh, aren't those the challenges of being a mom. Here's another challenge for you. Have your kids already said to you, "Mom, I'm bored"? Or have you just gotten on edge that you're watching your child play video games every day? There again, I am feeling your pain. So, just the other day, one of my children, I said, "You know, you really need to get a summer job." And my child says, "I can't go apply for jobs today. I'm PMSing and the whole world is bringing me to tears." And I just thought to myself, you know what? I have to go to work when I'm PMSing and the world doesn't stop for me. So anyways, to be a teenager again. But anyways, you and I, we get to commiserate for the next 48 to 50 minutes, and I'm happy you're here. I want to thank our sponsor, Pre-Mama. Pre-Mama is prenatal vitamins and supplements. Pre-Mama takes you on the journey into motherhood, all the way from conception to having that teenager just about. And we thank Pre-Mama for being with us every week here on Mom Talk Radio. We have such a good show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking with authors and with moms just like you who are doing pretty amazing things in the kitchen. We're going to be talking about meal planning and a whole lot more. And the good thing is that you got me. And no matter how challenging your week is, I've been there and done that. Just remember, when you have a screaming baby on your hip, they become teenagers. And then worse than that, they become 20-year-olds. I heard recently that between 31 and 35, your kids finally kind of like get it and you start to see the foundation and the values that you raise them on. So you know what that means for most of us? We got another, 10, 15 years before we even get close to that. And for others, you got another 35 years until you see all your efforts come out in your children. Anyways, I'm in a good mood because my child who is deployed in Afghanistan actually comes home in 3 weeks. So stick with us today. We've got a great show lined up. We're going to feel really happy by the end. And when we return, we have Laura Jean Baker joining us. She's the author of The Motherhood Affidavits.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
I am super excited to have with us Laura Jean Baker. She's the author of The Motherhood Affidavits. She was raised by therapists and married a defense attorney. And she writes where mental health, crime, and family intersect. She went to the school up north, which if you're an Ohio State fan, you don't ever say, but it's University of Michigan. And she's joining us here to talk a little bit about her book. So welcome, Laura Jean, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. And I should say, I identify as a badger, as a Wisconsin badger, more than a Wolverine.
Oh,
so if that helps alleviate any of that tension, I'm hopeful.
Good. Well, my son coaches football for Ohio State, so I'm like a new fan to Ohio State. So,
exciting.
And they beat University of Wisconsin last year in the bowl game. So you're allowed to cheer for the Wisconsin Badgers.
So yeah, we weren't so hot last year. So
let's talk about your book. So tell me what it's about. It has such an interesting title.
Thank you. Well, the Motherhood Affidavits is a kind of braided narrative. So I would say about half of the book is about my journey toward becoming a mother of five children. And the other half is about my husband's work in criminal defense. And he started his criminal defense practice in 2008, right around the time that my third of five babies was born. And so I kind of weave together case studies from his work in criminal defense alongside my what I call my addiction to childbearing, because it was around that time in 2008, I realized I wanted many, many more children, that three wasn't enough. We did stop at five, but it kind of explores the way in which he works with clients and people accused of crimes, many of whom are addicted to substances such as heroin or alcohol or cocaine or other drugs, and my sort of addiction to oxytocin, which is the, as you know, the love hormone, the feel-good hormone associated with pregnancy, childbirth, breastfeeding, and everything motherhood related.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's really cool. So you must have really great conversations around your table at night, because my husband is actually a criminal judge. And so I'm sure that we both could share some really interesting stuff there.
Yes, and there's kind of an endless wealth of stories. It's just, you know, we had to choose about 12 for the book, but we were selecting from about 1,000 of them. So as you know, it's a never-ending turntable of sad and sometimes comedic stories. Yeah.
So tell me about the first time you realized that you were addicted, as you call it, to oxytocin. And like that must be a really interesting thing to realize that you have that kind of addiction.
Sure. So I was, before I had kids, I was in my early 20s, pretty depressed and felt kind of just purposeless and aimless and was tired all the time. And I'd been on some medication. I'd gone off the medication. I was seeing a new therapist, and we were looking at new options for treating my depression with antidepressants. And truly, my body at that time, which sounds kind of ridiculous, but my body had this kind of urge for children to conceive babies, this sort of appetite for reproductive sex. And as soon as I got pregnant, I immediately felt this kind of bliss, this kind of happiness. And I should say that I was very sick. So I'm not one of these moms that doesn't, throw up and get sick and, you know, gag at the sight of most food. So I was very sick, but I could just tell that mentally, psychologically, something had kind of switched for me. I did at that time, though, think of it as addiction. I thought of it more as just like happiness, right?
There was this
like newfound purpose in life, and had my first baby and went on to have a second, which I think, you know, many of us do. And it was around the time that my son, so my second baby was not fully beginning to wean, but was like eating solids and stuff, so I wasn't nursing as much. And I realized I felt this little dip. I suddenly felt a little bit depressed again. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. Let's have another baby, right? So I wanted to kind of repeat the cycle all over again. And even three children, nobody much balks at that, right? It's a little over the average 2.5, but three seemed reasonable. And then my third was born around the time my husband started his work in criminal defense. So he was talking about addiction a lot and thinking about addiction a lot and bringing those stories home that you're describing. And I started to kind of put two and two together, because I really then, again, when my third baby was about between 12 and 18 months, I thought, I need another one. And it started to feel more like a need than a want. And even four seemed reasonable. But of course, after four, I wanted a fifth. And I was kind of beginning to put together that my depression was being treated by everything associated with motherhood. And a lot of it was very chemical and biological. And I think it had a lot to do with the oxytocin that was coursing through my body and making me feel, you know, connected to my babies, but also just making me feel physically good.
So how do you manage it now? Like without, having a whole bunch of babies?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Well, I will say, so I breastfed for 13 years straight. So my youngest baby now is four, well, he'll actually be five this month, but I breastfed him until he was four. And finally, when it was like, you know, 2 weeks before he was about to begin four-year-old kindergarten, the entire family sort of had an intervention and said, "Mom, he's going to four-year-old kindergarten. We need to wean this baby." And we did in about two and a half weeks, but I do think the breastfeeding for all of that time kind of sustained me because, of course, oxytocin is released when you breastfeed. Right. The other thing I've done is I've taken up running. I was a runner when I was younger. I kind of took a break from that when I was, of course, having babies and nursing babies and running after babies. And now I've started running again, and I do feel a little bit, it's not quite the same rush as having babies, but you know, you get the endorphin high of, right, I just ran 6 miles and it was faster than last week when I ran 6 miles. And so the exercise is the only thing I've found that really gives me that same kind of electrifying sensation. But that's what I have to, every day I tell the kids, like, I need to go out and run or I need to go for a long walk. So that's one of the things I found. That,
yeah, I get it, because I feel the same way. I've got to get to that exercise, and ultimately I ran 26 marathons to get there, but I got there. I want to make sure that we get the name of the book in again, because it's so interesting. It's The Motherhood Affidavits. We have a link to it on Mom Talk Radio, and laurajeanbaker.com is the website where you can find Laura. Laura, we'll have to have you back to tell us how you raised five kids in a chaotic dual household, income, dual career household. And we appreciate you so much being with us today. And pick up a book if you need, pick up this book if you need something really good to get you through your summer. Maybe you're laying on the beach after the rain passes this week. It's a really great book, The Motherhood Affidavits. And when we return, we're going to be talking with Dr. Mike Scaringa. He is a professor of research at Tulane University School of Medicine, and he's got some really interesting stuff to share with us.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
Delighted to turn the spotlight on a mom who's doing pretty cool things. Her name is Ruthie Kerwin. She has a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and she's a blogger and runs a website. I'm going to let her tell you all about it, but I want to welcome Ruthie to Mom Talk Radio. Hey, Ruthie.
Hi. Hi, Maria. How are you?
Good. I know you do a lot around meal planning. So what's your website? Yes.
My website is Percolate Kitchen.
PercolateKitchen.com.
Yep.
Great. So tell me a little bit about it and what we would find when we go there.
Well, on Percolate, my main focus really is on finding systems and routines and strategies that help busy parents, but especially working moms, find ways to make weeknight cooking less overwhelming. So I share meal planning tips, meal prep tips, tips and ideas to help you be able to work at home without losing your mind. Simple recipes, kind of kitchen hacks sort of a thing. So it all encompasses just making that weeknight cooking a little less stressful.
Oh, yeah. And because, you know, 80% of all moms don't know what they're cooking at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So
yeah, I mean, I've been there.
So what is your, like, do you have a go-to meal?
I do. Well, I'm kind of an evangelist lately for sheet pan meals. If you've heard of those before, where you pretty much put your protein and a veg and possibly a starch, everything goes on one great big cookie, like not like a cookie sheet, but like a hardcore sheet pan, put it in a hot oven, and then everything's done at the same time. So playing around with different recipes and sauces and mixes and stuff that can make that, it's one pan cooking. You only have one thing to wash. If you line the pan with tin foil at the end of it, you don't even need to wash the pan. So that's pretty much my go-to on a really busy night is something simple like that.
That's pretty cool. So how does it differ than a crock pot? It's probably quicker, right?
Oh, much quicker, yeah. And then you can get kind of caramelization. You can play around with the flavors this way. So if you're putting vegetables or chicken or anything into a hot pan or a hot oven, they're going to get that browning. They're going to get a little bit more caramelized. It just ups the kind of flavor component. So. And with crock pots, obviously you get a different type of flavor and texture, right. But that's something you need to remember to do in the morning with a sheet pan. If you come home and it's 5 o'clock and you're like, I don't know what to make for dinner, a sheet pan meal can go in the oven and be out in 20 minutes. And then you're sitting down to dinner.
Right. And also a crock pot. Yeah. Like everything's all mixed together and.
Yeah. And which is great.
Right.
But yeah, but and
some,
it takes you
some
know,
households
hours.
Like, yeah, the kids don't like all of the mixed all together kind of thing, right?
Yes, never. Yes, that's the other issue. At least with a sheet pan, you can kind of, you could separate things. You can give some people one part of the meal and the other people the entire meal, if you know what I mean. So if
yeah, right.
Who doesn't like carrots, it's much easier to leave that off the whole entire dish.
Tell me about like your freezer meals, because you also believe in planning ahead.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I love freezer meals. I am a member of the My Freeze Easy. It's a great like a meal planning website. If you want to check that out, I've got information for that on my site as well. But more than anything, I really like doing something that I like to call DIY freezer meal kits. So that would be instead of making an entire meal, sticking it in the freezer, this would be where you're taking components of a meal and freezing mm-hmm. them together but separate. So it kind of goes hand in hand with the idea of like a meal kit box that you would have delivered to your house, like Blue Apron or HelloFresh. But this would be, you're in control of the own dish. So a great example I like to use is, say, chicken enchiladas. I make a great chicken enchilada dish. There's a bunch of different components to that. There's a shredded chicken, black beans. There's a tomatillo sauce, flour tortillas. If you make that ahead of time and then freeze it, it's good. But if you make all of the components separately and then pop them in the freezer together, your dish tastes twice as good. It saves a little bit more space in the kitchen or in the freezer, rather. And it's a handier thing to kind of pull out and quickly assemble.
Oh, that's really cool. I never thought about it doing it like
yeah.
that. So I
yeah.
always wondered this. Can you freeze rice? Like, can you cook
yes.
rice and freeze it?
I do that all the time. I like to freeze it and then bring it down to like room temperature, chilled a little bit. And then I take what has been in the pot, what's cooled down. I put it into great big Ziploc bags and flatten them, and then you can stack those in the freezer. And then when you pull them out, they just take a minute to defrost. That's a great way to make fried rice, too, because freezing takes out a lot of the moisture that cooks into the rice, and that makes uh-huh. a way better fried rice. So that's great. That's a great weeknight recipe.
Oh, that's interesting. I never, ever knew that. So I just want to, real quickly, can you let everyone know where to find you?
Yeah, percolatekitchen.com. Just percolate like coffee, P-E-R-C-O-L-A-T-E, kitchen.com.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it, Ruthie. And when we return, we're going to turn our attention to, believe it or not, toddlers and PTSD.
Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
So, way down at the Tulane University School of Medicine is Dr. Michael Scaringa. He is a professor and a vice chairman of research for psychiatry. And he founded a private clinic of Child Counseling Associates that started the Kid Catch Foundation. He's also the author of They'll Never Be the Same, A Parent's Guide to PTSD in Youth and Treating PTSD in Preschoolers, a clinical guide. So welcome, doctor, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you don't often think about a child and PTSD. So can you talk to me a little bit about how the two are linked and how that happens?
tight. We usually think about combat veterans and soldiers with PTSD. But actually, there's a wide variety of things children can be exposed to that are life-threatening. There's physical abuse, sexual abuse, witnessing domestic violence, motor vehicle accidents. For little children, it can be dog attacks. Of course, there's natural disasters and other kinds of disasters.
And how would you know that your child may be suffering from this?
Well, following one of these types of events, any sudden change in children's behavior ought to give you high suspicion for PTSD, because among psychiatric problems, PTSD is just about the only one that has this sudden onset, where one day you didn't have it and the next day you do because of the traumatic event involved. But specifically, there's 20 symptoms in the official diagnostic criteria parents can look for, and we divide those up into three types. There's the re-experiencing type, which are things like nightmares and intrusive thoughts about the trauma that barge into people's minds. There's the numbing and avoidance type. There are things like loss of interest in usual activities and withdrawal. And then there's the increased arousal type, like difficulty concentrating and difficulty sleeping.
And if you saw any of those, would your pediatrician be your first stop, or is it something else?
That could be a first stop. It depends on your pediatrician. Some are better attuned to psychological issues than others. They certainly would know the word of mouth in the community of mental health experts that they could then refer you to. Pediatricians are great for that. But one of the messages of the book for parents I'm trying to make is that it's up to parents to take charge of this, because clinicians unfortunately miss the diagnosis of PTSD about 90% of the time.
Wow.
So parents can actually play a role in helping to identify it.
So how do you, like, you know, we've been talking about hurricanes because I live in the state of Florida and we're still trying to get over last year's hurricanes, and we already have a named storm. So how do you know whether it's something like trauma or it's actually just stress? Like, what's the difference?
That's a great question. It's an important difference. Trauma, the type that leads to post-traumatic stress disorder, usually are life-threatening events. There's usually like a moment of sheer panic for your life. Stress, on the other hand, we have all sorts of stress in our lives. You know, parents get divorced, we move to new school, we see violent things on TV. Those are stressful, but they're not the life-threatening kinds of events that lead to PTSD. And it's important because for political and personal reasons, people try to label stressful things as traumatic, and it can lead to the wrong kinds of treatment.
How do your readers benefit from reading your book? Is it a first step or what's the
benefit? Will learn how to recognize PTSD. At the end of every chapter, there's bullet points that encapsulates what parents can do. They will learn where to go to get free checklists that they can download to do their own self-assessments with their children. They can learn how to find the right kind of therapy. You know, there's lots of different psychotherapies out there, and some are evidence-based and appropriate for PTSD, and mm-hmm. some are not. And there's also some misinformation out there about trauma that I kind of explain the science and correct some of these misinterpretations.
So give me an example of some of the misinterpretations that we might some of the myths.
Well, one of these is this idea that stress damages the brain, that somehow children are more vulnerable. That's the prevailing opinion in the field, because people have done like MRI and brain imaging scans, and we can see that there's some differences in the brains of people with PTSD compared to people who don't have PTSD. But when we've done more modern studies where they actually look at the people's brains before they were exposed to traumatic events, they're seeing that those differences were there before the traumas. And that may explain why they were vulnerable to develop PTSD, not that trauma caused damage to their children's brains.
Wow, that's very, very interesting. So where can folks go to find your book?
It should be at major bookstores, but of course it's on Amazon.com.
Well, I appreciate that. So let me ask you one other thing about this. If we're one of those moms that we're unsure, maybe our kid did go through a very stressful an event. Is there a worst way to handle it so that we can maybe avoid that?
Well, I think the worst would be to ignore it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's quite what you're asking, because we've this case
right,
is in the book.
Right.
We see
But I mean, is it discounting the feelings that your child or the actions your child may be exhibiting? Is it, telling them just to get over it? I mean, is there the worst way to handle it?
Yes, and actually the ones you said are really good examples, just telling them to buck up and get over it. We've seen there's a case in the book exactly like that of a parent who thought their child was just weak because they had symptoms and just told them to get over it, and parents who ignore it, because if parents don't talk about it, kids are not going to talk about it with their parents.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on Mom Talk Radio. Really great information. And the book is called They'll Never Be the Same, A Parent's Guide to PTSD in Youth and Treating PTSD in Preschoolers, A Clinical Guide. Thank you so much for joining us today on Mom Talk Radio. When we return, we're going to be speaking with Rhonda Nelson. She is the wife of lead singer and bass Wayne Nelson of the Little River Band. She's an author, and she's going to be talking a little bit about what she's doing and what she's writing.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
I am excited to have with us today Rhonda Nelson. She's the wife of the lead singer of one of my favorite bands, Little River Band. She's an author and a motivational speaker. She was born and raised in none other than Nashville, Tennessee, and she's a lover of all types of music. So she also has a love for the ocean and a whole bunch of different passions. She's written a lot over the last many years, and she's here to share some of her thoughts on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Rhonda, to Mom Talk Radio.
Wow, thanks so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
So I want to dive into your passion for the ocean, because as someone who lives in Florida, I'm often amazed that kids in the middle of the country, some of them have no relationship to the ocean, whereas like our children were raised on the ocean. Why do you think there's that there is an importance for teaching your children to respect the ocean and to celebrate it?
Well, it's interesting. We live in South Florida, and I am amazed. It's not only kids in the Midwest that don't really know about the ocean. I was really amazed that some of our own kids right here in South Florida and in other parts of Florida don't even understand the meaning of how the ocean affects everybody's lives. The ocean's responsible for a big percentage of the air we breathe. And I think people, even in the Midwest, should teach their children about protecting and respecting our waterways as a whole, because it all mm-hmm. feeds into the ocean. And like I said, the ocean is responsible for so much of our livelihood. And I really feel like, even me growing up in Tennessee, you're not exposed to it like you are, like you say, when you're in Florida or in other parts of the country where the ocean is right there at your fingertips. So it's really important that not only as parents, but as teachers, we share with our children just exactly the meaning of what this great big body of water that encompasses the whole entire world means to us and to our everyday lives.
Yes, absolutely. And the ocean is an amazing place, even if it's not the sea life, it's just the part it plays in the whole earth. So I want to shift gears just a little bit. You wrote a book, A Different Life, to share kind of what it's like to be married to an iconic lead singer in a band and one who's been touring for almost 43 years. What is that life like? I mean, to be the wife of someone where women and people are throwing themselves at your husband all the time, like, what's that like?
Well, you know, I think over time, your whole perspective and your whole understanding of the lifestyle changes. You know, in the early days, we all have this kind of woohoo party atmosphere type of mentality. Here of late, what's really interesting is to go out every night after the shows with the guys in the venues and meet the fans and get to talk to them and just really hear the stories that how the music has touched their lives. And, you know, just to see these people put markers on events in their lives based on the music of the band. And over the years, I've seen people come to the shows and then they bring their children to the shows. And now we're seeing those children grown up and bringing their children to the shows. And you get such a more in-depth meaning out of this lifestyle. Now that we're older and we step away from the quote-unquote party rock star rock and roll lifestyle, and when you see what the music really means, it's heartwarming, it's humbling, it's just an amazing feeling to listen to the stories.
I think we all remember where we were when a favorite song was playing, or, you know, we all have favorite music that kind of embraces a time of our life, and particularly Little River Band for those of us who are boomers. Like, you know, it was a first boyfriend or it was a dance or something. So it's so cool that it must be really cool that you can impact and touch someone's life and that people remember the words 43 years later.
Yeah, it really is. And I tell you, I have to share this story because it to this day, it sticks with me. It was after the first Gulf War, and I was out on the road with the guys. And when after every show, like I said, they go out into the lobby, and or if it's a fair or a festival at some designated spot, and they meet the fans and take pictures and, you know, whatnot. And a guy came up and he said, listen, every day that we left our base, we got into our tank and we put in a greatest hit CD and we listened to Help Is On Its Way, rolling out into the desert to do what we had to do. And every night coming back into our base camp, we listened to Cool Change. And to this day, right, that still gives me chills when I hear how
fantastic
much that music meant to them.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that story and others with us. And we love having you on our show, and we have a link to your Instagram account on Mom Talk Radio. And when we return, we're going to turn our attention to Scott Weatherford. He is going to talk a little bit about preparing ourselves with safety tips for outdoor grilling.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
Delighted to have with us Scott Weatherford. He has worked in the propane industry for Blossman Gas since 2003. And during this time, he's served by actively developing, planning, and implementing safety awareness programs and training. And we're going to be talking with him about how to be safe this year as you're doing your outdoor grilling. I want to call out the fact that Scott is was in the United States Air Force Reserve. And I want to thank you for your service to our country and thank your family as well for sharing you with us. So welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Scott.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me in Blossman Gas.
Well, thank you. So one of the things that we always do when we're lighting our grill, it seems like, is we turn on the gas and we throw the match toward the grill because inevitably the little lighter thing doesn't work right on our grill. Go figure. We buy one every year, it seems like, but we tend to throw a dozen matches into the air over to the grill until it goes woof and it lights.
Well, we don't
clearly
want
this
boom.
Is not the way to do it, right?
Well, I think there might be a better alternative.
Talk to me about what we need to remember as we go into the summer.
Okay. Well, I heard someone say just the other day that the Memorial Weekend is the unofficial start of our grilling season. So to start with, we have five top tips for propane grilling safety. And the first and foremost is along the lines of what you just described. We want to check for leaks and make sure that our grill connected to our propane cylinder is leak-free. And to do that, a good solution and simple solution is a water and mild soap detergent. We can spray that on our fitting where the grill connects to the cylinder and make sure that we're leak-free. We should never use a match or a lighter to check for leaks. The second thing, to make sure that the grill is clean each and every time. So before we start, we want to make sure it's clean, and then afterwards, after we finish grilling, we want to take the time to grill to clean the grill grates so that they're ready to use the next time we're outside. Another simple solution for the making sure that the grill grates are clean is to use a PAM type spray, maybe not that particular brand, but a spray that would to keep the food from sticking to the grills. After we use that spray, we want to let that dissipate, and then we can light the grill.
So why is propane the best or should be like, I mean, why is that the best way for us to cook when we're doing outdoor living?
Well, a good question. Propane is a clean, safe, and now it's even a renewable fuel. It's ready when you are.
And so one of the things that I've been seeing is that like now outdoor living includes so many more outdoor appliances rather than just the old gas grill that we got at Lowe's or Home Depot. What's the trends for 2018?
Oh, great question. By far, I think the latest trend has to deal with fire pits. I think we all enjoy a cozy fire, even in the summer evenings. I think we all like to huddle around and maybe grill or marshmallows or s'mores or something in that nature. But by far, the patio fire pits have grown by leaps and bounds.
Is there anything that we should know about those fire pits? I mean, is it okay just to get the store-bought one if we decide to build them out of pavers? Is there something we should consider?
Budget number one, there's a product for each and every budget. But when we make our determination, safety is always first, and we want to consider placement. So we always need to follow the manufacturer's guidelines when we're trying to determine where we're going to place our fire pit so that we can have optimal performance.
Well, I want to thank you so much. And is there a website for Blossman Gas that we might find you and their products?
BlossmanGas.com. And
great.
You can also call 1-888-BLOSSMAN.
Great. Well, thank you, Scott, so much for getting us off to the right start with this summer season. I want to thank you guys for listening. You know, as we go into the summer season and you want to take Mom Talk Radio with you, feel free to download our free app. You can listen to any of our shows. You can have me on your earbuds as you're laying in the sand. Don't forget to wear sunscreen. And I'm Maria Bailey. I'll talk to you next week.